It's Wednesday, May 25th, 2011, and you're listening to episode 232 of Fear the Boot, a show about tabletop role-playing games and a little bit more. Running time for this episode is 54 minutes. Welcome to Fear the Boot. My name is Dan.
My name's Chad.
This is Wayne.
My name is Pat.
Boy, I hope I don't get an on-call right now.
Oh,
I thought you were going to say, oh, never mind.
Yeah.
Either way, Chris isn't here, so the episode will lack a certain venerable insight, but will be significantly easier to edit. Announcement-wise, the only thing we've got to say is that the auction for the guest appearance on Fear the Boot is still going on. It will not be going on much longer. When I set it up, I was hoping to let it run for a couple weeks, but apparently the max amount of time eBay will let an auction run is 10 days. So you got another couple days as of this episode dropping to get in on that. The good news, at least for me, is that eBay now has a thing to where you can tie the auction directly to a charity, so when it cashes out, 100% of that cash is sent straight to that cause, so I never even have to touch the money, so therefore you can be 100% certain of the fact that it's going in the March of Dimes and we're not laundering it or something stupid.
What?
Like that.
You said the plan was that we'd get the money and we'd go,
shh, damn it. Just the loud part quiet and the quiet part loud.
Damn it.
I blame Pat.
I do too.
It is my fault.
All right. Topic we're going to start off with today is something that occurred in the game on Sunday, which is narrative combat. Now, let me set this topic up.
Is this a gaming story?
No.
Damn it.
I mean, I'm sure a gaming story will come out of this, but nonetheless.
Oh, let's hope not.
Well, at least it was something that happened on Sunday, so it's not one we've told 100 times before. But
this is the first of the 100 tellings,
yes,
of the story.
Yes, exactly. You are here for a historic moment. This would be like tuning in for the first time the season story
I
was told.
I remember where I was when I heard the first telling of that story. It was a marvelous day.
Damn, I thought you said Chris wasn't here.
Why? That was clear and cogent.
Oh, I have to pee.
So what we mean by narrative combat is combat in which all of the actions are simply described. There's no dice rolling. There's no mechanic that you are using. You're simply declaring what
I think there's mechanic, in a way.
In some super abstract way. There's not a mechanic there in a way that anyone but you would choose to recognize it. There's no math to it. There's no dice to it. There's no random decision maker of
any kind.
What's
your definition of mechanic? Because this is something that I have a problem with, is that people are like,
Pat, well, will you grab him a copy of the Webster's Dictionary right there?
Well, listen.
That's a thesaurus. Look up at thesaurus, words that are similar to thesaurus. You might find dictionary.
I saw Webster and I got excited.
Maybe you should look up thesaurus in the dictionary first.
So,
look up dictionary in the dictionary.
Well, here's what I'm saying, is that people have heard how I like to run games and how I enjoy games.
Okay.
And they're like, well, that's not a game. Sure, you're role-playing, you're playing a role, but there's no game. There's no game in what you do because there's no math and there's no dice and you don't have to write anything down with pencils. Therefore, there is no game. Well, that's not true in any way, to my mind. There's a mechanic, there's rules. Just because there isn't numerology doesn't mean that there's no rules, no way the thing should be done.
There may be, but it is a social structure. It's not a mathematical structure. And I suppose the more important distinction is it is now a subjective structure, not an objective structure.
Now,
hold on a second. Let me explain
as long
that.
As it, well, go
if
ahead.
We say it requires an 18 or better to hit, that is a black and white objective number.
I submit that it's not.
What?
And the reason why I submit that it's not, because, oh no, he's saying something crazy. The reason why I say it's not, how did you get to that 18? Well, it's dark out. Well, how dark is it? Is it dark enough that it causes a problem, or is it just light enough to where it's okay? Guess what? That's a subjective decision that's based on role playing, which is fine. I mean, that's great. But that is a subjective answer to get to that number.
But the number then exists.
But the number does
exist.
And
when the action happens,
I'm not saying
there
it doesn't.
Is a objective
correct.
Number you're going
for. I'm not saying that it isn't. But to say that there's absolutely no subjectivity to, as you define, the mechanical rules.
I didn't say that. I said at the end of the day, there is an objective target which we are working against. There is a non-human arbiter of whether that objective target was hit or not, and this, die or whatever the case may be on that particular system. I will agree with you, absolutely. Even in the most crunch-heavy system in the world, there is still some amount of subjectivity in it. That's an argument I 100% agree with you
on. If there isn't in a role-playing game, don't play that role-playing
game.
Well,
no such role-playing game exists. Yeah. You're deluding yourself if you think any game is purely objective. But my point being, though, that in a typical game system, D&D, Savage Worlds, Hero System, Battletech, whatever, certainly there is some subjective element. But for the most part, you have fairly structured systems to arrive at a specific number and then a decision maker to dictate the outcome in an inarguable way. And yes, I realize people argue anything, and yes, I get that. But my point...
Next thing you're going to tell me is these games are like fair or something.
But my point being, in a narrative system, what we are doing is we are not rolling dice. We are not using rules. I am simply stating what I want to do in a purely subjective way. The game master analyzes that and replies to that. Now, what I want to set the parameters of what we're not talking about is we are not talking about a specific system here. Fear the Boot has always been and probably always will be
a Battletech podcast.
Yes. The only official FASA podcast.
Yeah.
Tom Dowd, Sam Lewis, you guys owe us.
That's right.
For all that publicity we're giving you after
a
your
nickel
company's
an episode.
Folded. Yes.
And yes, we do know that there are systems that have this type of combat we're describing.
Yeah. Amber
with
Dice.
Great power.
Obviously, yeah. Amber Diceless being the most obvious example. But this is a podcast that focuses on concepts, not upon...
I've been on the internet too long because I just wanted to say obvious example is obvious.
Thank you.
You said the obvious example is the obvious example.
I know. If you'd said obvious cat is obvious or something, you'd done a little bit better.
I'm sorry.
But
you're not a cat.
No.
Well, I guess you could be a cat.
With
like
the right Photoshop
cool,
skills, yeah.
Cool jazz sort of way.
Well, his avatar on the forum's a lion. That's a cat.
That's true. Dan, in my heart, you are a cool cat.
Thank you, Chad.
You're welcome.
All right.
You're welcome, baby.
But we are not discussing a specific system or a specific setup or structure for approaching these narrative combats. We're just talking about the concept in general. The brief gaming story of where this came from this past Sunday was there was a fight between Pat's character and another character.
NPC.
Yeah.
Not a PvP.
I'm sorry. Yeah. A non-player character. Player character and a non-player character. With two player characters supporting Pat, and Chad opted that rather than put out the minis and roll dice, that he simply said, Pat, what do you intend to do? Mm-hmm. Here's what the NPC does. Here's the result of the actions. Now, at first, when you started down this road, I'll be honest in that I got really nervous, and here is why.
I didn't ask anyone's permission.
No.
And I didn't set it up.
It wasn't so much that. It was more the fact that I have seen this abused too many times in the past. And here's how.
That's the key problem I think we're going to get at later.
100%. Yes, this is the key problem we're going to get at. But I've seen it abused too many times in the past. And here's how. On the game master side or player side, there's really one truth, which is both of them have or could have a preconceived outcome they want for the situation that becomes immutable. That the game master wants this NPC to win, wants to harm you in some particular way in the process, or wants you to totally kick ass. The player, once again, typically will want to win, but has some preconceived notion of how they're going to do that, and these become an immutable fact. The example that I would give is many years ago, Tim and I were playing on a MUD that was purely RP combat. There was no built-in die mechanic, random number generation, etc. And the problem that we ran into was that whenever we went into combat, you were supposed to role play it out in good faith. Well, needless to say, good faith never happened because you would end up in a combat with somebody and you'd be like, okay, I swing my sword at you. Well, because of my years of training, I dodge out of the way and you cut only grass. And then I strike back and stab you in the shoulder.
And then my response is, because of a genetic issue in your parentage, you suffer a massive brain hemorrhage and die on the spot.
But nonetheless, it's just like no matter what you did, you couldn't affect these people. And so what ended up happening was the reasonable people always lost to the unreasonable people because of these preconceptions about how things were supposed to go. It was always abused. And coming into the combat, I wasn't per se afraid that you, Chad, would abuse it to the extreme I'd seen done in the past. And I did not object either to, in this particular case, shorthanding the combat in a non-numeric, non-rules way to where it was purely narrated. But my concern, at least on a subconscious, if not conscious level, was that the reason we were narrating it was because you had an end in mind, and this was the best way to make sure we got to that end. Now, you didn't do that, and bravo to you for not doing it.
I did have an end in mind, but the end in mind had nothing to do with the combat. It had to do with we were introducing a new character, and I wanted to throw the new character into a combat to provide the camaraderie. Yeah. I don't know you. Do I trust you? Oh, my God, here's the situation, and you helped us out. Now I have reason to trust
you. Right, yeah. To explain that in more detail, Johnny G was up for the weekend, and so we tossed him a one-time NPC, and Chad wanted to give us some moment that would build trust between the party and this NPC. Well, what was an NPC is now a PC. And so he engineered this combat to where John's character would be of great aid to Pat's character and thus endear him to the party. But coming into that, I was really concerned that this was going to be abused, and I really have to tip my hat to the fact that it wasn't in the ways that I've seen.
Let me hand you a hat.
Oh, thank you.
Okay. There's so many to go around.
I know. And now I tip my hat to you to the fact that this wasn't abused in the way I've seen it classically abused.
So what happened was, in sort of a macro term, with this campaign that we've been talking about for months now.
Because we've been playing it for months.
We've been playing it for over a year.
Sign of the apocalypse.
Yeah. Is that I want to keep trying new and different things. Yes, we're playing stodgy old boring, it's been done, D&D 3.5. But I keep wanting to try new and different things. Like, I have the players make parts of the world.
Right.
And they define the character, the players define the world and get the buy-in and all that we talked about. And there was a thing where we used chess pieces and blocks, and the blocks made out streets, and it was this sort of RTS tactical sort of turn-based thing that had nothing to do with the D&D rule. And just all sorts of different concepts that I've been musing over, and some have worked really well. And some haven't worked so very well at all, but
it comes with the territory of
experimenting. I'm glad I tried them.
Yeah.
You know, I have no regrets about trying any of them. This was one of them, is that in every combat we've done has involved dice and involved that sort of thing. And I wanted to do something narrative. This situation fit because I wanted to do something quick. I wanted to do something poignant, and I wanted to do it for a reason. I did not approach this as a combat. This character, this NPC that we're fighting, was an assassin, like an arcane assassin. She had these brands on her. The brands did things. I had in my mind a specific list of things that they did, and she sort of tapped the brands, so to speak, that empowered her. Like, if she did ones on her arm would become incredibly strong and powerful, and Pat cast a spell on her, and she reflected the spell back on him by utilizing the brands. But there was things that happened, like she couldn't use multiple brands at one time. When she expended the brands went on a sort of cool down for the evening. She can only use a brand once or twice. And I didn't set any of this up. I just said, Pat, what do you do? Okay, this is what happens. I gave him a detailed description of what happened. And Pat, after a couple of rounds, Pat put the pieces together. And he's like, this is what the brands are. This is what it means. This means she has a finite number. This means we have to survive the fight. And we can just keep hitting her with little stuff that would throw her off and expend the brands. And then we can go in and we can kill her. And Pat put together this plan. There was this teamwork. Like I said, I did not think of it as a combat. I thought of it like a puzzle. Like you go into a dungeon and there's a door and there's all these little holes. It's like, oh, if I screw up the puzzle on this door, the poison arrows are going to come out, and I have to do this with the lights and the gems and the whatever. That's how I approached it. But I also approached it with, I am removing a huge amount of control from the players. I'm removing their abilities. I'm removing the mechanical aspects of it, the dice, their numbers, their stats, all of that stuff. I am taking that away from them. But because I believe in trust, I want my players to trust me, and I trust them. I want them to be able to do anything that they want to do. And I don't want to abuse what I have just done. I will take that away, but that means they're going to win, and I'm not going to cock block them. I'm not going to make it to where I do this. Ha ha. No, you can't. That's a wrong answer.
Yeah, that's a fast piss off.
Yeah. No, what I wanted to do is they do something, and then she responds to it within the framework I have established for her, and I keep that framework consistent. That's the most important thing, I think, when it comes to these sort of narrative, specifically narrative combats, is that if you're playing with no rules or very minimal rules, is that what happens has to remain consistent. If I had her just jump up and suddenly she's Superman invincible for no reason because I needed her to be invincible at that point, that's not fair. I mean, it's just not fair. I wouldn't want it to be done to me like that. In the end, I wanted a specific outcome. But what I wanted out of the outcome is what I wanted, what was great for the story and what was best for the players.
Yes, it really had nothing to do directly with the combat.
Yeah, I didn't want what was best for my NPC.
Right.
And I don't see the story as my story. This is our story.
You know,
you're not characters of my story.
One of the interesting things about all of this was, you know, my character wasn't there for the beginning of the battle. He was watching it because of the way things were set up. Mm-hmm. I jump over the wall, feather fall, I'm rushing in. As I'm rushing in, trying to decide what I'm going to do, I'm still remembering everything I've tried in the past with dice. And all of the really cool stuff I've wanted to do, typically I roll horribly. So all of the really cool stuff I've wanted to do in the past, usually it doesn't happen. I was thinking when I run in, oh, I want to tackle her. Oh, but grappling rules always suck. Then we're okay, well, we're not using grappling rules. I can do that now. Then her character gets knocked off of paths. Like, okay, I want to hit her with the frying pan. But every time I try to use this thing, I've used it successfully once. Every other time it's failed. So it's like, okay.
And the one time you used it, it's a freaking frying pan. But you got your bard. You got this great story out of it.
So going in, my thoughts are, okay, I'll do what I generally do. I'm going to heal Pat. And that was the action I initially declared. Because it's so stuck in my mind, if I try this, I roll the dice, it's going to fail because it always fails, and I'm never able to do this because it's something I want to do. Even knowing that it was a narrative combat, it was hard to break that in my mind. I wanted to say I grab the skillet and I whack her over the head, which is what ended up happening.
Well,
I'm so used to saying I grab the skillet and I whack something over the head, and then rolling a one.
I saw kind of what you were going for. And this is another thing. You have to know your players. You have to know your players and limits. And Wayne was like, well, I run past her and I heal Pat. Because Pat had taken some hits. He'd been stabbed a couple of times. I look at Wayne and I don't remember what I said, but it's something to the effect of, really? Could just whack her. Could just pull this John McEnroe with the frying pan and whack her upside the head real good. And you're like, your eyes got really wide. And you're like, really? I'm like, yes.
Because you described what I thought about doing running in.
Mm-hmm.
And I discounted it because I'm so used to discounting it. Because I know I can't roll to do it. Yeah. I'm not a combat character. So in combat, I typically do the healing because I know I can't roll to hit.
Mm-hmm. And I think that it goes two ways. When you're running a narrative concept in a combat, you can't make the players your punching bag. By the same token, you can't make the enemy their punching bag because anything they do is meaningless. You have to make that play. I mean, Pat, this character that came after you, did you get the sense that she was dangerous and you were in danger?
I did, because I pretty quickly put together who it was. I knew who this character was. We hadn't encountered her in the past, but we had seen what she was capable of.
Right.
I knew that this is who this was, so I thought, this is... She basically, what she did, to tell a little bit more of the story, she came in, she was sitting in the tavern, and she essentially, Sir William was talking to her first. You were thinking that she was there for you, and she just kind of, she was brushing you off sideways, and I think it was throwing him off, and I caught on the fact, I think she's here for me. Mm-hmm. So I eventually sauntered in and walked over the table, and I said, you know, okay, what's the deal? What are you here for? She goes, I'm here for you.
Yeah.
And she goes, unless you want all the people in here to die, why don't we go outside, find an empty field, and then I'll do what I'm here to do, which is kill you. I sat there for a few minutes thinking, okay, what am I going to do here? Mm-hmm. And I finally said, to hell with it. I said, okay, let's go. Let's do it.
Yeah.
Let's get this over with.
Your character is that egotistical, and
yeah,
it's great.
Yeah, and that's how it got started. So, yes, I knew that this is going to be tight, but I knew it was going to be interesting, I really like how it was done. Mm-hmm. I like how you did this in this narrative way. But here's what I'll tell you from my aspect of it. Mm-hmm. I was not really nervous going into it as much as I would have been, like what you were saying, Dan, because I guess the trust was there with me with Chad. But I think once it was established that this was going to be diceless and it was just going to mm-hmm. be a storytelling, I was like, well, I'm almost 100% certain that Chad is not going to kill my character here. So, I was all but certain. Like, yeah,
I do like that. Almost 100%. Yeah.
You never know with Chad, but I'm pretty sure I'm not going to die. So I know what the eventual outcome is. Right. I'm going to win. I'm going to succeed.
I was never concerned that Chad was going to kill the characters.
Much.
But more, my bigger concern was, is he going to railroad us into some humiliating or undesirable end that we have no ability to overcome?
And that's
because
interesting.
It's pure storytelling.
Because that was not even, I wasn't even thinking along those lines until you just said it here on the mics. And I'm like, oh, wow, yeah, I never considered that. But what I was going with is it's because I had that almost certainty of I'm going to survive this. It took away just a little bit of what the dice do. And that's what the dice do for me is, even though, and I know we've talked about this ad nauseum before, the GM is telling the story that the character is going to win because the player characters are supposed to win. Yeah. I mean, generally speaking,
the type of game where the player, the characters
generally speaking, the player characters are going to win. But I think what you've got there is with when you throw in that mechanic, like we're talking about with the dice or whatever it is you use, that little bit of the chance of fate sort of a thing is you what you get is that just that little bit of uncertainty. And even though you know in the back of your mind, yeah, we're still going to win, I think the dice, what they allow me to do is they allow me to sort of have that just that little bit of uncertainty and give way to the to the fates. And this might not work. And that's what you're talking about, Wayne. And I hate to see that you're so down on it, because I think what the interesting thing is that humans always remember and focus on the negative.
Yeah.
The one thing you never remember, you don't really ever remember the critical successes as much.
No, it's
not like the failures.
Well, I mean, to give an example, we always talk about dice trading, and we always, Dan and I both have our dice.
That's a typical thing.
This last game, it's like, well, I'm rolling so bad on 20s, I took every one of the dice and moved them on one. Now they don't like being on one.
In hopes of making them so bored with critical failure.
You know, you talk about the surprise aspect of it, and it's like, you don't, believe me, I understand that visceral, down to the wire, last hit point, what's it going to roll? And then the world goes, you roll the dice and the world goes into slow motion and it's like 4, 19, 2, 15, 1, it's a 20! Yeah. And then, you know, the crowd goes,
obviously,
wow.
I didn't roll it.
No, you didn't. But you can simulate that in a narrative combat by surprising the person. And I think, I hope I got you a little bit with that, because consistently she was doing this sort of thing. She had these runes on her leg, which allowed her to move at really, really fast speed. Mm. She was taking arrow hits from John, and she was using the runes to push the arrows out of her and kind of heal her. And John figured out, it's like, well, instead of aiming where she is and she runs fast and moves out of the way, I will aim where I think she is going to be. And he did that successfully a couple of times. And I mixed it up where it's just like, okay, she's running. And then halfway to the target, which was Pat, she uses the runes to leap into the air because she has this super strength on her. And she lands on Pat. She's this little waif of a thing, barely weighs 90 pounds. She's technically a halfling, even though halflings aren't in this game. And she lands on you. Her feet are in your pectoral muscles. Her hand is grabbing your hair, holding on. And I say that she moves her right arm all the way back like she's going to stab you. And you see a rune this big, huge, blue, glowing room that you could see from across the field burst into life. She is going to take your head off with this dagger. And your eyes got wide. And you're like, holy shit. And then it's like, that was her turn, that I get to describe relatively whatever I want to describe. Then it's John's turn. John gets to describe whatever he wants to do. And he says, you know, I'm surprised and blah, blah, blah. And I change focus and I'm going to try and take the shot. I'm going to risk hitting Pat. I'm going to nail her in the back just to throw her off, to throw off her aim, to do whatever. Boom, boom, puts two in her back.
See, and that's the big change, is in a normal mechanical system, there's a three-part system. The players describe their actions. The GM describes the NPC actions. The dice decide what happens. Yeah. Mm-hmm. The thing that scares me, and once again, you didn't do this, but I've been burned by in the past, is in a narrative system, the players describe, the GMs describe, but for both the players and the GM,
both are 100%.
The GM decides.
See, and that's BS.
It is BS, but that's how a lot of times it goes down. I agree with you. It's wrong.
There's a lot of people, I think, at this point, it's like, oh, but if you're playing this particular system that's a narrative game, then that's not true because of this rule. We're not talking about a specific rule system. We're talking about the abstract of doing a narrative style combat.
Because we just did it in D&D 3.5.
All the parties involved get an equal franchise in what is going on. It is Pat's turn. Pat tells me what he is doing. I trust Pat to tell me what he is doing, and what he says he is doing is what happens. I trust him. He's one of my best friends. Why am I not going to trust him? So when it's my turn, the NPC's turn, then I describe what happens. I don't say what Pat did not happen, but I describe what happens in this framework that I set up. And the cool thing about that is that we'll use Johnny G here as an example. Johnny G appreciates failure. And he appreciates not succeeding 100% of the time. So this chick is on his back, on his chest. She's about to hit him. And it'd be like, wouldn't the drama, wouldn't the story be great if I missed? And he says, you know, I let two fly and I graze her and it moves her hair. And the other one misses completely. And he tells me that's what happens. Mm-hmm. Then it's your turn and you have to deal with the consequences of that. And I think that the dice dictate to you when you succeed and when you fail. Now, I'm not criticizing dice for that. That's what they're for. So. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
sometimes
that's great.
I very much want that.
Yeah.
I don't want to always choose when I'm going to succeed and fail.
Sure.
I want the dice to tell me sometimes.
But you know what? I do like it when I can choose when I succeed and fail.
Let me give you, and by you here, I mean everyone that's listening, people at the table and the people sitting at home or in their cars or at work or whatever. Two and two here. Two things that I think are wonderful about narrative combat and two pitfalls that you need to be careful to avoid. Number one, on the positive side, it's fast and colorful. That unlike moving minis around a table and rolling dice, this is something that can be very quick. Mm-hmm. It's very descriptive because you don't move a mini five squares. You instead have to say, okay, I'm looking for a path in. I'm setting this up. I'm going for that.
That's exactly what your character was doing.
Exactly. That's what I had.
Cool.
The Knoll that I had in there was not my main Knoll, one of my other Knolls. I just said, you know what? I'm going to set myself up for success, not by rolling high dice, but by declaring actions of I'm going to be looking for a path in and things like that. You don't slow down and get bogged down on rolling dice, looking up charts, et cetera, et cetera. It is fast. It is exciting. It is colorful. The other positive, and I realize this is going to sound like I'm contradicting myself, so let me explain this. But the other potential positive is you can get the exact end you want. Mm-hmm. Now, I realized before I described that as a negative, but that was in the context of when the GM has something in mind that is unfair or unpleasant to the players. But when you have a purpose in mind, such as in this case, Chad, you were trying to use the combat not for anyone's ass get kicked, but instead to simply build trust amongst the party, you can set these ends up and you can guarantee a certain outcome will occur. Now, the two downfalls or the two things you've got to watch for is, first of all, let me juxtapose my last point here, is don't have an evil or unpleasant end in mind, because if you do, the players will feel cheated. They'll be like, wait a minute, I had this power, I declared this, I didn't even get a saving throw against that, and now I'm butt naked and half dead in a jail cell?
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
Sounds like an awesome game.
Yeah, we call that Thursday.
Yeah.
It's going to be like, you know, BS, and it's just going to piss the players off. Yeah. I've been that player, and I'll tell you, it pissed me off.
You know how to avoid that? Golden rule.
Slap the GM.
Well, no, I mean, it's golden rule. I mean,
rule of reciprocity. Yeah.
Yeah. Would you, if you're the GM and you set that BS up, do you as a player want that coming at you?
Yeah. Would you feel that's fair? I mean, you at least.
I mean, if you do, then. And your other players all pissed at you, maybe you need to find like-minded people.
I mean, but if you roll the dice and fail it, I mean, you may be annoyed at your bad luck or perceived bad luck, but at least it was not something somebody did to you. But when the GM just says, nope, no matter what you do, you're screwed. That's crap. That is just total crap. The second thing, and this was something, Chad, that you raised at dinner, which I think is the core point.
Well, I raised a glass of wine at dinner.
Mm. But more than one.
Core point. Romanian Riesling. I never had a Romanian Riesling.
It wasn't bad. It was pretty good. Yeah.
But the main point that I think is just the central thesis to all of this is if you are going to make narrative combat work, whether it's shorthanding in a system that has a combat system or it's in a system that's designed for narrative combat, is you have to keep in mind the goal here is to tell a compelling story. Mm-hmm. It is not a competition.
No.
And that is the problem I had on those MUDs. The problem was I wanted my character to win. They wanted their character to win. And as a result, it was a competition. They were going to describe every outcome to their advantage. I was going to describe every outcome to my advantage. And this whole thing just descended into stupidity. And it gets worse when you have a game master, because unlike player to player, the game master can trump your actions.
Right.
And so the game masters and players both have to have a sense that we are not going into this to compete. We are going into this to forward a story in a way that is mutually beneficial to all parties involved. The player may accept, okay, I'm going to take some hits and licks along the way. But the game master also accepts, I'm not going to just hand them a you're screwed card where they had no chance along the way to do anything about it.
And I'll counter that, because I totally agree with that. I'll counter that, too, that the GM should not feel compelled to hand them an I win card. I left Pat with a scar on his face from that. He made a decision, and make it wrapped at least within the whole theme of what you were doing. My thing, we talked about how they were in a tavern, and the tavern was full of people, and she said, well, let's step out here so all these people don't get killed. Well, the idea was not that she was going to, like, set off a grenade and kill a whole bunch of people if you said no. The idea was is that you guys are a bunch of evil bastards, and you are in a tavern full of people you don't know, and one of your number one enemies is sitting there looking at you going, I'm going to kill your best friend.
Yeah.
I set that up because I wanted to see what the players would do. Would they attack her in this bar? Because suddenly lightning bolts are getting thrown, fireballs are getting thrown, axes are swinging left and right. Some dude's singing in the background, Wayne. And so there's going to be a lot of collateral damage here that would be perfectly justified. And I would not have left your face with a scar. But you chose to take, you're still evil, but you're not that evil. And so you decided to take a different route, and it was a harder route, and you took it and you overcame. And there is just something in the story to me that was very poetic that I left his face with a mark because of it. I don't know. You do not have to hand your characters an I win card. It has to be a balance.
I think the trick here is you have to hand them a card that they will accept within the parameter it was out of their control.
Mm-hmm.
That I never got a roll against this, but what happened I'm willing to live with. Because the minute you hand them a consequence they're not willing to live with, the question is going to come up, dude, this rule says X. I had a saving throw against Y. I had a chance to do Z. You just shanked me.
Could you whiteboard that out?
I could if we hadn't moved the whiteboard out of the room.
I don't need to. I just cast mend.
Yeah.
The big board's in the other room. Yeah. And I even let you keep the scar.
Yes, you did.
After the battle was over, Chad described that on a spiritual level, there's some kind of like seeping wound from the scar. So I said that I was going to put Lesser Restoration on it. And just like, well, I know.
I hate it.
But Lesser Restoration doesn't remove scars.
Scars, yeah. I thought you were removing
it. It just stops attribute
hemorrhaging. So what happened is this, the enemy, this weaponized assassin, used her runes on her leg to run real fast and jump way up high in the air and then land on Saren, Pat's character, plant her feet on both his pectoral muscles and one hand in her hair, and she rears her arm up, and it's glowing with a blue rune that is going to kill him. John puts two arrows in her, describes it, it's really cool and stuff, and she recoils in pain, but she does not turn off the rune in her arm to use the rune on her body that expels the arrow and heals her. She's going to take her shot, but because the convulsion of pain, she reels back, and when she goes for the swing at his head, her knife is too far back. And it grazes, the barest razor graze from his cheekbone across his nose. And because she's putting so much supernatural strength behind it, her arm keeps carrying to the left, pops out of her socket with an audible pop, and spins her off of Pat. She does a couple of rotations before landing in the ground.
Yeah, see, and you know what, Chad? That is a double oddity, because not only was she not a Baron Von Badass, the unkillable NPC, not only did you grant Pat and John your attacks harmed her, but you even wrote in there her own actions harm herself.
Yeah.
She has failed. Not she was defeated. She has failed. And I'll tell you straight up, you are the first person I have seen run a narrative combat that did that. And this is why, I mean, I didn't say anything at the table, because it's like, you know, this has just started. I'm going to grant Chad the benefit of the doubt. But man, when that started, I'm like, this is just going to go nowhere good. Because I've never seen it go anywhere good.
Your faith.
You were expecting Saren Gate.
And I'm like, great, we're about to have Gnarl Gate 3. I mean, this is...
See, to me, the worst possible thing that I could do, and not to make it a gaming story, but I think the worst possible thing that a game master doing a narrative concept, like a narrative combat like this, is they do this, you do this, they do this, you do this, they do this, you do this. I want the combat to be over. She bursts into flames and floats 3 feet above their head and says, ha, 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 you cannot harm me. And then she flies off and you can't get her.
Oh, yeah. I've seen it happen so many times.
God. And it's just like, Mike, are you kidding?
The Kefka anime.
Yeah.
No matter what you do, tee-hee-hee, and they run off.
Yeah. And it's just like, that's BS. I would have rather you killed my character, because at least that would have been believable, cool, interesting, not lame, stupid, idiotic.
The best thing to do in a situation like that is to just ignore that bad guy from then on. Just like, you know what? I'm not going after your big bad.
Totally.
I don't
give a
about your big bad anymore. I'm going this way.
They show up in the next tavern, making all their speeches and their cool, dry wit, and you're like, I'd buy that guy a beer, and then I leave.
Yeah, yeah. We're going to find another inn.
There is no problem.
This inn's really gone downhill.
There's no problem that doesn't have a passive-aggressive solution.
Oh, yeah.
So we all pretty much agree. We enjoyed this. This is something we enjoyed for this session. My question for everyone here is, would you want to do this as the regular way to do combat?
No. Not in this
only
game.
Only a one-time thing.
Not in this game.
I would be happy to have it be more than a one-time thing, but I don't want it to be all the time.
No, me neither.
I wouldn't even want it to be every other time. But, you know, I think the important thing that you should take from this is it has to be the right type of a thing, too. Yeah, you have to know when to do it. It's like gambler. You have to... Mm-hmm. No one to hold them,
no one to walk away.
Yeah.
Yeah, this was a special combat. I mean, there were a lot of reasons going into it that made it special. The return of an NPC that had been, that we had built up as a big bad.
Yeah.
John was here temporarily with a one character. And, you know, there were a lot of things building up to it. That's why I think it worked so well this time. I agree. I don't think I would want every combat to be like that. But if you do it, you know, if you occasionally do it, it just makes that combat even more special.
The reason why I wouldn't want to do this all the time is because that's not the type of game we're playing. We are, more or less playing D&D 3.5.
All right. So, Chad, here's a question I want to ask you, but I want to put to the table in general.
What is the definition of poppycock?
No.
You've got the dictionary.
Actually, just have a sort of M.C. Escher linguistic moment. I did look up dictionary in the dictionary. I was just curious if it would contain a definition or like see rest of the book. It did actually have a definition of dictionary.
Take two steps back and look what's in your hand.
But the thing I wanted to bring up was this. John was visiting us just for this one game. Yeah. Now, as we understand it and as he plans it, come August, once he's done with the bar exam, he's going to join us on a more permanent basis. But from what he's expressed, this character may or may not be fairly disposable. We talked in the past about how the man likes failure. Mm-hmm. Most of his characters will die. Now, there's
His choice.
By his choice, yes.
His insistence.
There's sort of a mini topic here I want to hit on the way out on this episode related to John's habit of doing that. And I don't think we need John here to discuss this because it's not...
I'll speak for John.
Well, and it's not his decision to do this that specifically I want to discuss. But there was a guy on the blog, and I want to say his name was Ian, and if I have the name wrong, I deeply apologize. But he's been asking us for a while to tackle a subject that I keep meaning to tackle, but we got sidetracked, and then we lost the email, and we're just bad people in general. I'm just going to go ahead and say that. But he wanted us to talk about players who are a little too eager for their characters to die. Because most players have the reverse thing going on. They will lie, cheat, steal, and bend to keep their characters alive. But every so often you run into someone, John not being the extreme of this, but he's the closest we have, to where they're so fascinated by the failure and the end that it is very hard to build a group template and a campaign with continuity. Because from the moment that character rolls off the shelf, they are looking to get that character killed. Mm-hmm. And knowing in this case that John brought in a PC who may, I realize he's still kind of going back and forth on whether this is going to be a multi-PC like I'm doing or a one-shotter who's supposed to die. How in the past have you dealt with his predisposition to self-destruction, especially in regard to how that affects the group template and the continuity of a campaign?
Well,
and this is a rare problem, but apparently we're not the only group that has it.
Well, you say stuff like group template, and that was like a really foreign concept when I was running with John. I think we ran games how most people run games. They made the characters they wanted,
right,
and then we made the party work, which is... Mm-hmm. I mean, that sounds pretty...
That's not the best way to approach it.
It's better if you do the other way around.
Yes.
You make the party work, and then you make characters that... They don't necessarily have to... Anyway, that's totally different.
Right.
Actually, we should revisit the group
template. We should. Group template, I believe, was Fear the Boot episode 1.
Yeah.
Because it's either that or social skills. But yeah, someday
we should come back to that.
Yes. It's social now that we're...
skills.
I know, believe it or not. That debate, that endless debate between Chad and I that has never ended. But nonetheless, one of these years we should redo the group template episode. But go on.
So... And it's kind of different each time. John usually one time John was playing a very tragic, very depressed character who was the leader of their, it was Battletech, and the leader of their lance and stuff. And I'm not sure he was 100% happy with the character anyway. And
right.
The character was very depressed, and he was a coward, and he died a coward's death to be replaced by a character who was not a coward. And so in the theme, at least within how he was in the game, his theme of the game, it kind of made sense. It made it work. He died a coward's death because he was a coward. Other characters, they live hard and fast lives, and they die hard and fast deaths. The other character, like his AI that he played, that turned against the party. He had no plans on turning against the party. I had no plans on turning against the party. He played it in character, and it's just how it turned out. And it was great, and you can only keep that going for so long. I'm not saying secretly backstabbing the party. I'm talking like sending out attack drones and police and trying to actively kill the party. And eventually, majority rules, the party killed him.
Yeah.
And that was great. It was a really, really great way to go. I deal with characters who or players who want their characters to die differently. You know, they say, I have this character who's like A, and then they want to end up like C, dead. It's my, I view it as my job to fill in B. And it's like how they get there. And I try to keep it as in theme with A to B, because I don't want A T C or A Z A B C A A Z C, confusing myself there. I want A B C. And it's my job to make A, B, C happen when they provide me with A and C.
All right, if I can break down your letters there.
Yes.
Is your general,
do we need to whiteboard this?
No, is your general point here that you want some kind of an organic continuity to the character's progress towards death?
Continuity? I want a continuous theme. Theme, to me, right, is more important than, well, I guess.
Well, what I'm trying to draw out is, what is the difference between a Z and a B?
A Z would be, I am playing a character, well, to use John's examples, I'm playing a character who lives a hard, fast life. I make really fast, loose deals that are very dangerous, you know, on a street level sort of campaign. I'm a drug user. I don't care what happens to me. And I'm not outright suicidal, but, you know, I just live this super dangerous life that is going to end in flames. So you have hard, fast life at A, and you have dying in flames at C. B cannot be the coward's way out.
I see. So we are talking about continuity and organics here. I think the way that I would approach it, and I've always in my games had to deal with reverse problems, characters who are trying far too hard to always succeed, to always survive.
You just run with a really horrible group of people.
Well, you know what? They were great gamers, but yes, they really had a sort of competitive spirit.
See, to me, as a game master, if I have a group of people who are like, power, 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 I need to be the most powerful thing in the game, it's like, okay, first, let's set a bar, and you can have anything you want as long as it's within that
frame.
Until it's like, I need to play this game so at the end of it, I get the +5 Sword of Smiting. It's like, well, does your character need the +5 Sword of Smiting to start the game? Is that what you need to play a good character and give me a good background in playing character? Because you can have that damn sword. I want you to play in character and have a deep background.
Right. Well, and a brief aside, that's why I like games like Star Trek, because in Star Trek,
+5 phaser of smiting.
Yeah, exactly. The phaser vaporizes people. What more do you want? I mean, there's
I want double vaporization.
There is no such thing as a power progression in Star Trek, but that's a huge tangent. But getting back to the issue of players that want to die, or players that want their characters to die, let me rephrase that, is that I think I would take it the same way I would any other thing, is I'd sit down, because I mean, look, RP is expression of self in one way or another. It is some expression or exploration of self. And I sit down and basically, dude, why is it you want this character to die? And then I would kind of...
And then by the end of the conversation, you reduce them to tears. And they're like, my mother hates me.
And then I'd basically say to them, I mean, look, we've made a group template. The point of the group template is we have a group of people who are intertwined, who work together, who have reason to be together. I'm not saying your character can't die or death is impossible, but if your plan for every dude you roll up is for him to make the fastest beeline to the grave,
well,
this is really disruptive to the game.
Well,
and I mean, and I get it. Like, what is, why is it you want this?
You have to understand, too, if the game is long enough, it isn't like game one, I'm playing this character, and then game two, check out.
Right.
You know, it isn't like that. There's a lead up to it. There's a story. And then when they die, supposedly, that affects the other character in the course of the game.
Oh, and yes. And
it's wonderful.
We've played games where it's been beautiful, where the death of a character has been a powerful turning point.
And then when they play their second character in the same campaign,
right,
maybe they shouldn't
check
out.
But I think
out.
My point being, though,
you know, it's like maybe they should kind of
stay. Well, see, I would have that same problem even in different campaigns if it's the same player character that's doing it. I mean, if Bob's character is always going to die,
that
it's not going to carry the weight.
That doesn't bother me for one reason. It's what Dan brought up. So many people want to succeed. It's good to have that juxtaposition.
Well, but you know
I
what?
Think, again, that goes back to the expression of self. I mean, yeah. I think we all kind of want to succeed. So to see that in a character, I don't see as a bad thing.
I disagree, because I enjoy failure in a game.
Well, but here's
and I enjoy success in a game.
I would enjoy
failure on the path to success, because you learn from your mistakes. I don't want to have a character. I personally, my opinion is not to have a character that is ultimately an utter failure.
I like
that's just me.
You know, you think about Shakespeare. Shakespeare has, he has his fair share of tragedies.
fair share. What else does he have? Anyway.
I think of like Hamlet. I have never played a game, and I would love to play a game, not where everybody kills each other and sleeps with each other's mothers, but more one where in the end, yeah, everybody dies, and it could be heroic, it could be successful. I would love to see a tragic ending to a campaign. I'd love to
see
a tragic
ending. We did play that campaign.
We've talked about it before,
yeah, where my character was the only one left.
And he was really messed up.
Yeah.
And you weren't like, haha, I survived because I'm the most powerful. I won. It's more like, oh, great.
I sit atop a kingdom of ashes.
Exactly.
I would be fine playing a game like that. I hesitate to say a campaign. Well, and now by a game, I mean a multiple session game is fine, but I wouldn't want to.
Well, here's
I would have a real problem with a longer running campaign that ends in tragic failure like that.
Well, here's where I would come down. Chad, I totally understand your attraction to this because of the fact that it stands in such sharp contrast to the usual rut. Mm-hmm. But nonetheless, it's just a different rut. Yeah. And if you get a player where all they want to play is the super successful cut purse thief, that's annoying. Yeah. If you get a guy where all they play is three games later they want to be dead, that's just a different rut. And I'd basically sit down with this guy and say, look, why do you get so much out of this? And can we please try some variety?
You know, I think that John likes that dark, exploring that dark aspect. For him, it's not the death.
Right.
In fact, I don't think for these people who like their characters to die, I don't think it is about the end goal of death. I think it is about the journey, the dark sort of journey, the tragedy, exploring that sadness.
It's like the original World of Darkness. The outright said in some of the books, you're supposed to hate your own character.
Yeah.
It's supposed to be an exploration of evil and depravity.
See, and to me, a game where you play evil characters, much like you guys are playing now, I think a great ending to it would be tragedy. I think that would be a wonderful end, but much to my kind of sadness, small amount of sadness, it wouldn't work with this group. I don't think it would work with this group.
Yeah, I mean, I would have no problem at all with, you know, my character going down in flames and not surviving. But if in the end his whole journey had been pointless because it was an utter failure. I don't mind that as in a character, in a book, in a TV show, something like that. But if I've invested and I'm controlling the actions of this thing, there's got to be
Hamlet,
something at the end.
Hamlet was tragic, but it wasn't pointless. I mean, I kind of see it as pointless because I really hate revenge. But to him, he did the honorable thing. So it wasn't pointless, but it was so much a tragedy. I think it would be kind of lame to end on a totally down note where you guys failed and everything you tried went up in flames and the legacy you have has been wrecked and the ground filled with salt and no one was remembering you and you can't even expect to be used as the boogeyman to frighten children. You are forgotten. Game over. What'd you guys think? It's like,
they're one year of my life.
Yeah. I think you can have tragedy without the pointlessness. I do agree with you.
I don't think this obsession with failure is something that afflicts too many players. I mean, for most of us, the obsession with success. But given the fact that someone raised this question, I felt we ought to at least kick it around for a little bit. So don't forget to get out there. Check the show notes for a link to the auction. Like I said, you still have a short while to get in on that. This won't be the last one. We've already got several other ideas for stuff we're going to be auctioning off. And really, I guess that's about it. So thank you guys for tuning in. Have a wonderful week and wonderful games. And we look forward to seeing all of you guys next week.
I wanted a tragic end to this episode.
Fine. I'm kicking you off the show.
Yes!
That's not tragic.
We're switching to a news magazine format.
No!
This has been a production of Fear the Boot, copyright 2011. Listeners are free to use this show in any non-commercial endeavor as long as credit is provided to feartheboot.com. You can find previous episodes and other resources at feartheboot.com. Fear the Boot is also a member of the Pulp Gamer Media Network of shows. You can find other great shows in this network at pulpgamer.com.